From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
What you pay at the pump helps pay for the roads you drive on, but fixing Illinois' old roads, filling potholes, and repairing bridges is expensive.
There is a lot of conversation going on with Republicans and Democrats to make sure that we know all of the sources that might exist for revenues for a good, solid infrastructure program for the state. We do not want our pensions to crowd out investing in all of the very important things that we need to invest in for the future of the state. That means education, that means public safety, our universities, healthcare, et cetera.
Chicago's population has fallen for the fourth straight year. The U.S. Census Bureau showing a loss of 22,068 residents between 2017 to 2018. Chicago lost more than twice New York City's drop in population.
Well, Illinois gets some more bad news about its population numbers. What should we read into that? And all at a time when Governor J.B. Pritzker is trying to get some of his ideas through the legislature. We'll talk about that and also get a status update on key issues. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Joined today on our panel by Charlie Wheeler, former State House journalist who runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Daisy Contreras, our State House reporter, and joined this week by Jacqueline Driscoll and Mary Hansen, both reporters for NPR Illinois. It's good to have you both on again.
Glad to be here.
Same here.
Well, Daisy, let me start with you. Governor J.B. Pritzker getting some pushback in the past week over his plan to deal with the state's pension debt. He has proposed several measures, but one that many are pointing to would extend what is known as the pension ramp. That's a time period that's set up to get the pension system more close to fully funded. He wants to extend that another 7 years, and that would save some money now, but the long-term consequences are a concern for many, and he's hearing about it from folks.
Yes. So under current law, the state's annual pension contributions must be enough to bring each pension fund to at least to 90% funded ratio by the end of fiscal year 2045. And like you said, Sean, that under Pritzker's plan, we would stretch that out to 2052. And according to Amanda Cass, who is the associate director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois in Chicago, for fiscal year 2020, the state's pension contributions would be about $1.1 billion less than what's required under current law. Pritzker says that's a savings, but we would still owe that money, so it's not really something that we're saving on. The criticism here, like you said, is coming from both sides of the aisle, Democrats who are unclear on what his plans really mean long term. One of the things that he is proposing is to use some of the revenue that is being generated from a graduated income tax to be put into the pension system. And as we have discussed before, this could be years before that tax system is put into place.
And Charlie, I guess I would say, is this just kicking the can down the road? That's the term everybody likes to use.
Yeah, it's a cliche, but it's also true. And as a matter of fact, what it means is, yes, we'll save money this year, but we'll have to make it up in the future. And what we'll also have to make up in the future is the investment earnings that did not occur because the dollars weren't there to be invested. As a matter of fact, that's why we're, depending on how you count it, we're $130, $135 billion behind in what we owe people in the retirement systems, because for more than a century, the state has never put enough into the funds to pay the cost of the benefits earned in a given year. And so the money that's not there in year one doesn't earn interest, and so your unfunded liability just grows and grows and grows. And back in 1995, they adopted this plan that brought some discipline in the sense that up to that point, it was up to the governor and the legislature to decide whether they wanted to put any money into the fund. Well, this 1995 law laid out a process requiring money to be put in at a fixed level, or a level that was determined each year, sufficient, as Daisy said, to get us to 90% funding by 2045. The difficulty is it was very much backloaded in the sense that the dollars in the initial years were really minimum, and then suddenly we had this huge jump, and we're now in the up in the billions, and pretty soon we'll be in double-digit billions that we're supposed to put in.
But Charlie, hasn't Has everybody stayed to that ramp through the years? I mean, I know there have been, you know, during the Blagojevich years, some things tended to fall off. And
Midway through Blagojevich's term, we took a two-year holiday in the sense that we put in, if memory serves, I want to say something like $2 billion, $3 billion less than was required under the ramp law. To do that, we actually had to change the law. And what the governor wants to do in terms of stretching it out, that will also require the law to be changed, because the way the law is written, the pension systems say, here's how much we need. The state actuary, who's basically the auditor general, reviews and says, yes, this is fine or not. Generally, they say, yes, what the actuaries have done is good. And then they certify the number under the 95 law. And part of the 95 law says, regardless of whether the governor puts anything in his budget, regardless of whether the legislature appropriates one penny for the retirement systems, those dollars will be automatically placed. It's called a continuing appropriation. The comptroller and the treasurer will automatically send that money to the retirement systems. And so for Pritzker's plan to work, we're going to have to change the substantive law and say, yes, we have to send it, but this year we're not going to.
Well, we talked about the graduated income tax. Mary, that's something the governor wants to have, and it's going to be a couple of years before he could get that put into place or into law, at least, if it does get to that point. It seems as though this could put more pressure on lawmakers and others to go along with that idea because, again, it digs a bigger hole for the pensions.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, Illinois, it's no secret, Illinois needs revenue for just about everything. but yeah, it could make make it a bit more attractive option if it would increase funding for lawmakers to get on board.
Daisy, that's something the governor, of course, has sort of keeps mentioning in the same breath. He has other ideas for the pensions as well that he wants to put ways to put money or restructure that debt somehow. What are some of the other ideas that he's proposing?
Well, we already said that, you know, one of his plans is to stretch out the payment timeline. Another one would be to make the existing pension acceleration program permanent. This program is essentially a voluntary buyout program that has an expiration date of 2021. Again, he hasn't really offered a lot of details in his budget proposal, but he has said that he wants to just ensure pension benefits all across the five pension systems aren't diminished, and at the same time making sure that there is less burden on the budget. And if we recall, former Governor Bruce Rauner had the idea that, hey, maybe we should reduce pension benefits in the future so that our payments would be reduced down the road. But, you know, that is not a great idea.
Charlie,
well, as a matter of fact, it's unconstitutional,
right,
according to unanimous decision of the Illinois Supreme Court. It said the pension clause in the Constitution means exactly what it says in plain English.
Yeah, so if you go in with certain benefits, that's what you deserve for.
And so that debt is not going away. That's one way to look at it.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think people who should know better mislead folks by saying, oh, we'll go in and get away with that clause in the Constitution. We can wipe away this debt. No, you can't. It's there. It's a contractual obligation. You'd have to change the contract clause in the Illinois Constitution and U.S. Constitution to be able to get rid of that debt. It's there, and as I've said on other occasions, the longer you try and figure out some way to monkey around and come up with some cockamamie scheme to avoid paying it, the worse it gets. You got to just face up it and say, look, this is what we got to pay, and there's no way around it.
And I should point out all the members of the panel, including myself, all members of the state university retirement system, as we're all University of Illinois employees. Let me move on to some other things. We'll be talking, I'm sure, about pensions as a budget proposal finally gets put together. But we're in the middle of a two-week break for lawmakers right now. Then things are going to really heat up for that final month as they come back right at the very end of April and all the way through May, in which they're scheduled to adjourn at the end. So many items still need to be worked out. And Jacqueline, one of those would be the legalization of recreational marijuana. We've talked about it a lot for the last several months, even really into last year when it became clear there was going to be a big push for it. Where does it stand at this point?
Well, I feel like I say the same thing over and over again. Still in negotiations. And lawmakers say a bill with language will be introduced, quote, soon. We've heard that since January. I do know that there have been a ton of working group meetings. I hear right now that they're meeting almost every day, even during this legislative spring break. They have an office in Chicago, and they're able to video conference with some people at the Capitol in Springfield. So some of the big issues that they are talking about right now, obviously revenue. How will it be taxed? Who will get the money? They're concerned about overtaxing it to draw people back to the black market, but they don't want to undertax it so that it's you know, not raising the revenue that we need here in the state. I spoke with Representative Kelly Cassidy the day she left Springfield, so a week ago now, and she said those conversations have obviously been the most popular. Everybody kind of wants a little bit of that money. So they're still working out a lot of things right now, but revenue seems to be an important topic.
And there's certainly people who will benefit from what could be a new industry in the state of Illinois. That's still being worked out, as well as who will participate in growing, selling, all of that?
Right. When I first started speaking with Senator Staines, Heather Staines, and Representative Kelly Cassidy, the lead sponsors on this bill, they weren't sure that the application process to get a license for a dispensary or a cultivation site would be that different. We already have the infrastructure in place with our medical program, but we're seeing a lot of issues arise with diversity in the market and people who do own these cultivation sites, these dispensaries, not a lot of females, for example. There's not a lot of people of color, but they also, not just ownership, but also employees and where these dispensaries and cultivation sites are going to go. They want to make sure that it's not just confined to certain areas of the state, that it's an opportunity for everybody.
And also, and isn't there some competition, I guess, between the people who are already growing it for medical marijuana, who say, oh, we can grow enough to take care of the recreational market, and the people on the outside who want to get in on the recreational pot are saying, oh, no, you'll never be able to do it. You need us to start growing, too.
Right. There's been some competing studies that have been released. One released by the lead sponsors shows that the current infrastructure that we have in place is not going to be able to sustain the demand for the product. But then the Medical Cannabis Alliance released another study that said, oh no, we can. For at least the first about 5 years, we'll be able to do it. So don't worry. You don't need anybody else in the market, which obviously, you know, people that are already in there want a little bit more of the money there. So that's also still being worked out. But Representative Cassidy is very firm on the fact that we do not want to oversaturate the market. So we don't want to have too many licenses, but we do not want to not have enough, especially because we already have this medical program in place. They want to expand the medical program as well, so more people will qualify for it. So she wants to make sure that there is certainly enough product available, especially for people who need it medically.
What about the question, and I'm asking in an academic sense, about growing it at home?
Still a very contentious topic. Law enforcement is completely against this. They do not want to see it happen. They've seen issues in other states with cartels moving into states where they do have home grow. But Representative Kelly Cassidy and Senator Heather Staines are still leaning towards this home grow. Cassidy says, again, like everything else when we're talking about in the cannabis field, it's already happening. People are already growing it at home, so it's not going to be a productive conversation to assume that they're not. Let's make sure that we can regulate it. It could be, you know, getting it medically now, there's a cost barrier for some people because insurance doesn't cover it. So this could be a good alternative for people who do need it medically as well.
There are people who oppose the idea of legalizing recreational marijuana, and there are people in the legislature who have been saying it's been moving too fast, mm-hmm. even though it hasn't moved hardly at all at this point. Okay. So with only about a month left, is any of that likely to derail this during the session? Could it possibly not get approved, as many people seem to think it's a slam dunk?
It's important to know that this is not a done deal yet, but I do not get the sense that this won't pass in May. I think Representative Kelly Cassidy is very confident that they're going to have a good bill. They've been working on this. This is not something that they've been steamrolling through, she says. This is a conversation she's been having for a couple years. And this is something that they're negotiating in good faith with a lot of different people. So they want to make sure that this is a good bill, that they don't have to, you know, slam through, get it passed, and then come back and work on it again. She wants this to be the gold standard bill, not only in Illinois, but for the U.S.
Another topic that's come up in the legislature and many people think is going to get approved in some fashion is sports betting, legalized sports betting in the state of Illinois. And Daisy, you've been following that. Any movement on that topic?
Very much like recreational marijuana. Stakeholders are still trying to figure it out. Final language for a bill. Questions. Will there be brick and mortar places along with online and mobile betting? Who will oversee the program and who gets to apply for a license? Everybody wants to take a piece of this. Everyone from casinos to video gaming to racetrack owners and even the professional sports leagues who want to pocket some of that money. So if we're going to tax it, let us have some money as well. It is very possible that there will be more hearings as we come back into the session. And I feel like we're going to continue to hear from different stakeholders. Before we went into this break, there were already several proposals on the table, but they were all very different from each other, and it's just trying to get pieces from each of them that would make it into a final bill. And again, a final language, who knows when that will be filed.
And Mary, you've covered the horse racing industry in the state before. This is something that they see as a way to make more revenue. It's one of the ideas that they have is to get involved with this. That's an industry in the state that does create jobs. So certainly you would think they would be part of this final discussion as well.
Well, they certainly want to be a part of the final discussion. And the I think the horse racing season just started this week or last week. And they see this as sort of helping to boost their revenues and sort of keep them alive. They've been trying for years to get different types of gambling at their facilities, slot machines, video poker, other things like that. And they really see these other avenues as ways to keep their industry alive.
And just like recreational marijuana, the final bill will have to be fair. If you tax this and that, how much are you going to charge for licenses? You don't want, what lawmakers don't want is to send people back to the black market or to go to other states to continue doing this. I mean, it's already happening, but the state would be able to get some of that money. And again, Governor Pritzker is counting on that some of that money to go toward the budget.
And we should point out, not nearly the amount of money that some people see with legalizing recreational marijuana. It would be a smaller amount of that.
Well, it varies.
In terms of licensing, he has more money set aside for sports betting than the licensing for cannabis. But in terms of like after the infrastructure is in place, after we get to sales, I do believe that recreational cannabis is expected to make more money. But again, that ranges from $350 million all the way to $1 billion.
And
we don't know where
that's
going.
And that would be in a mature market, right, once everything is in place.
Well, another idea that is out there and I think has a lot of support from many people, the devil is always in the details, of course, is a capital program, a statewide infrastructure program. I think anybody that drives down a road in Illinois realizes there's some need there. And, you know, it's been a while since the state had its last program. Mary, again, this is something you've been following. What's the status of getting a capital program done?
Yeah, like Jacqueline and like Daisy, I feel like we've been saying similar things for the last couple of weeks now. There is wide support for a capital bill. There's a House committee and a Senate committee, both who've been hearing testimony on the vast needs, both for what they call horizontal infrastructure, so the roads, the bridges, the highways, the railways, and mass transit, public transit as well, and then the state facilities, that sort of vertical infrastructure. So heard a lot from the universities about the needs on their campuses and the state prison system and the school system, just all these needs. And then, of course, there's the big question of how to pay for it. So it's all very much up in the air.
So how to pay for it? Gas tax increase is one possible, at least part of the one possible solution. And there's a few proposals out there on that.
Yeah. So there's two. Right now, there are two sort of filed proposals, one from the Illinois Chamber of Commerce and another one from the local 150 operators union. Both of them include a gas tax increase. One would double it to 38 cents a gallon. The other one would sort of slowly phase in a 25 cent increase, but also get rid of the sales tax or phase out the sales tax on gas, which does not go towards funding you know, road improvements, it actually just goes right into the general revenue fund. They both of those groups have said they sort of have put these proposals out there as a way to sort of jumpstart the conversation or try to get more more sort of public conversation about how to fund this. But they're still waiting to hear from a lot of lawmakers on it.
Surely everybody in the legislature likes projects they like to bring back home to their districts. So, you know, is there really a holdup, you think, here? I mean, can they get this done even if it comes down to raising the price on gasoline?
Oh, yeah, I fully expect that it'll get done because, as you said, that's something everybody likes to bring projects back to the district. And if I'm a lawmaker, and I've said this before, and I'm asked to vote for a gas tax increase, if I know that this road that my constituent shredded a tire on because of the potholes the other day, that road will be repaired, I can go back home and say, yeah, you're going to have to pay more at the pump. But on the other hand, you'll be able to drive this stretch of highway at a speed higher than 15 miles an hour without tearing up your tires. So there's like tangible physical evidence of the benefit of paying the higher tax. Same thing if some money is there for schools. You could say that gym roof that was leaking in the high school, that's going to be fixed. And I think that's why historically capital programs have always been approved. And the main thing that has kept us, in my judgment, away from doing it since, when was the last time we did it?
1990.
Part of it is a lack of trust in governors. Because again, if I'm going to vote for it, I want to be sure that the governor is going to sign off on it. And the way the spending bills are written on capital project, there's always a paragraph right at the end saying this money has to be released for the governor. And so now if I look at Rob Blagojevich and I say, I'm going to take a hard vote, but I don't trust him to do it. Or I look at Bruce Rauner and I say, the guy's a liar. I'm not going to trust him. I'm not going to take this hard vote. I don't think that attitude is there about J.B. Pritzker. And it wasn't there in George Ryan's time when we did it. It wasn't there in Jim Thompson. When was the last time George had a capital program funded not with gas taxes. The last time we did the gas tax, Jim Thompson was governor. People trusted Thompson. If he said, Wheeler, you vote for this, you're going to get the project, I knew I could take that to the bank.
And Mary, before I move off on this, this would give Pritzker some leverage possibly to say, you know what, we can get that project you want in there if you go along with some of the other things we've talked about. So it gives him some leverage for some key votes down the stretch. This might be one of the last things lawmakers actually approve this session.
Yeah, and that's been one of the things that's sort of talked about is that sort of holding out for a capital bill for these projects that Charlie mentioned to bring back to your district could be used as sort of leverage for some of those tough votes on the fair tax, for example, or what they call the fair tax on the graduated income tax, that they're going to have to vote to put that on the ballot. So in order to sort of gather up those votes for that or for legalizing marijuana, they could use this as sort of leverage to get some of those votes.
Just a few minutes left here in the program this week. And in that few minutes, I guess somebody's going to move out of the state of Illinois, at least if you believe the numbers. People are heading out the door. It seems much faster. Cook County losing more residents between 2017 and 2018 than any other county in the U.S. 86 of 102 counties in Illinois saw population loss last year, according to these census estimates that are out. Daisy, this is something that's starting to get more attention, and there's reason for it. But is it such a big deal to pay attention to at this point?
Well, in December, data came out that showed Illinois as a state had declined in population for the fifth year in a row. So I think this is a trend that we're seeing. We've been looking at the state's fiscal issues as reasons why people leave the state. Many claim to have left during the budget impasse and how that hurt them and, you know, lack of, you know, jobs or opportunities. But another very interesting thing that I don't think we pay a lot of attention to is that there are other factors that impact population numbers, like births versus deaths, and the number of people who come in from other states or countries. And what's true about the Chicago area, based on some of the research, is that birth rates have decreased and that there are less people coming in from other countries. So immigration is very important. I think that immigrants help sustain a lot of these communities, a lot of these counties.
And of course, why people are leaving or not coming back is always a big deal. Charlie, is this something, though, that we should pay attention to here? Because we're probably going to lose at least one seat in Congress. It's possible we could lose two because of, you know, federal representation due to this. Fewer people to pay taxes in the state of Illinois. Those are all real problems the state faces from this.
Yeah, and it's not just losing representation in Congress. There are a lot of federal programs that award money to states based in part on population. And so if our population is going down and other states are going up, some of the money that we could have received in terms of federal grants will be going to other states. And it's kind of an ongoing problem for not just Illinois, but other Midwestern states, with people moving out to the Southwest or retiring in Florida. Probably, just as a wild guess, I'm guessing had there been no air conditioning, Texas would not be up there as one of the most populous states. But it's something that we need to pay attention to. We have to figure out how can we attract more people. The Chicago area is going to be okay. The question is, what about rural Illinois? Because as you mentioned, 86 mm-hmm. of our 102? And I would venture that it means almost all of southern Illinois, all of western Illinois has lost population. That's a concern. Part of it has to do with the loss of industry, the loss of jobs, loss of mining jobs. Part of it has to be uncertainty about the future of the state universities that anchor some of those regions. It's all stuff that we got to worry about, I think.
Charlie, you mentioned universities, and one of the things I've been hearing, of course, is college kids leaving, going out of state, and not coming back. That may play into this as well.
Yeah, I think it's true. There was a lot of uncertainty during the time of the budget impasse, even whether some universities would continue to exist. I know at Western, programs were cut, faculty were laid off. And so if I'm a parent under those circumstances, or if I'm a student thinking about my future, do I want to go to a university in an area that maybe won't be there for 4 years? And then once I go out of state, I'm more than likely not going to come back.
Well, we'll move on now to our notes from the field. Jacqueline, let's start with you.
Yes, our colleague Dana Vollmer reported on a piece of legislation that passed through the Illinois House last week, and it would require all new water heaters to be equipped with a safety valve. This is in response to an Illinois toddler who died almost a decade ago.
And Mary?
Yeah, the story came out, I think it was earlier this week, from Grant Morgan with the Capital News Bureau in the State House, talking about regulation of personal robots, so some robots who carry things down the street for you as you ride your bike or you walk along. And so there's, I guess these are coming out potentially this summer, so they're trying to push a bill through that would regulate these robots.
Charlie?
Well, guess who's having a birthday today as we tape this show, which is Friday the 19th of April. House Speaker Michael Madigan was born on this day in 1942. So happy birthday, Speaker.
We're not going to sing to him though, at this point. So
I'll take cake, though.
And Daisy.
And more legislation. Illinois lawmakers want to crack down on people who tamper with critical infrastructure like railroads, dams, and power supplies. A House proposal would charge anyone who harms or trespasses on such sites with a Class 3 felony. That's like $10,000 fine. Opponents say this is a national effort to limit the rights of environmental protesters.
And, of course, we did see that situation occur back during the Great Flood in 1993, where somebody sabotaged a dam over near Quincy, causing a lot of damage. So we'll continue to follow that. That will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Daisy Contreras, Jacqueline Driscoll, and Mary Hansen. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. Production assistance for our program today was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.